Welcome to The Road Back to Life with Ashley and Don, a program brought to you by Patients for Patients with Kidney Disease and their families. Hosted by The Road Back to Life, a mentoring group for kidney patients. For more information on The Road Back to Life, visit us at theroadbacktolife.com. Now, here's your hosts, Ashley and Don.
Thank you so much for being here with us today. And this is part two of a two-part show that we have with Bobby. And if you listen to part one, which I really encourage you to, you get to hear his incredible story of him being a living kidney donor and how he came to the conclusion that this was something he wanted to do in his life. And I mean, he's a real hero in all of our eyes, because that is a huge step to take, and you are just changing someone's life for the better. So Bobby, thanks so much for sticking around and doing a second part with us so we can ask you some more questions that we know people need to have the answers for.
Happy to do it. Happy to spend as much time as you guys would like on this.
Well, we really appreciate it. And of course, I'm here recording from my home because of COVID on Camano Island in Washington. And Don is over in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And how are you, Don?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And I, too, am excited about hearing the rest of Bobby's story. I got to meet him just a little bit ago, and he's already one of my kind of guys, you know? So
you donate a kidney, you are my kind of person.
I like it.
Yeah. So, and yeah, encourage you to listen to part one, because it is an incredible story. So Bobby, can you tell us a little bit more about the process to be a kidney donor or a hero? Because I know that you went through the University of Washington, and when I had people testing to be my donor, they didn't call them donors, they called them heroes. And what type of testing did you do, and how long did the whole process take?
Well, you are very correct. At University of Washington, they do call these donors heroes, and it doesn't fit easily for me. I don't know really how to respond to that when my surgeon or other people refer to me like that. It's something I was fortunate to do and do my little part of it. And the University of Washington for me really feels like a family part of this whole journey, because of how they handled me from day one. When I reached out to them to begin this whole process, they got me connected with the online questionnaire, which just asks you a bunch of questions which could weed out anybody who might not qualify for various health reasons or concerns. And kind of once you get through that first little tour, you then begin the real testing. So it's a 24-hour urine sample, and thank goodness I had talked to a bunch of kidney donors ahead of time, because they told me for the 24-hour urine analysis, ask for two jugs, not just one. And I had no idea what they were talking about until about 18 hours in. And I was glad I had that second jug. I didn't understand at the beginning what the process was for a 24-hour urine test. But it made perfect sense to me now of why they want the entire sample of a 24-hour period. So, peeing in a jug, you know, for a day is, you know, a great way to start. And then having to find out that I got to actually put that in the refrigerator, it was a good thing that I was living on my own. It made it nice and easy at that point. So once the results from that came back, we were able to move to the next stage, which was a 14 hours of testing and evaluations done over back-to-back days down at the medical center down the University of Washington. And it's basically called the $1 million workup because they check everything. You start out with a psychological analysis segment. And I had been advised that this was going to feel very strange for someone in my position who basically walks in and wants to volunteer a kidney to nobody in particular. And the grilling that I got from the psychologist that day was relentless. It lasted about 2 hours. They were trying to find the hole in my story of why I wanted to actually do this. They tried every angle they could. And, you know, ultimately in the end, I obviously had nothing to hide. Once that piece was done, it's every other test you can imagine. And I'm so grateful that they did, because once I've finished that 14 hours of testing, and got the results that everything was good, I can walk away knowing that my entire vessel that is my body is healthy. They found the tiniest of nodules on my spleen, which I would never know because I'm never going to go get any type of a scan that would identify that. Mm-hmm. And they were able to say, like, yeah, here it is. They could show it to me on imaging and tell me why it's nothing to worry about. And I got to see all my organs and my insides. And I was like, this is super cool. the most enjoyable thing for me is I had a little bit of an upper abdomen in the heart region, a periodic like piercing pain. And only when we were at the tail end of the testing did I mention to them, hey, I've got this little thing. Is this something we should check out? And they're like, by all means, let's check it out. And so they signed me up for a cardio stress test, and they explained it as this 32 level test on a treadmill where at a certain time interval, they increase the speed and they increase the incline while you're hooked up to monitor your heart. And they explained that it had, you know, these different levels to get to. And they said, nobody's ever completed the test. And I said, challenge accepted. So I actually was thoroughly looking forward to that aspect of it. And they turned me off at the penultimate step of that stage when my heart rate got to 190. They found no other reason to continue the test. So when we finished, I told them it was their fault I didn't finish it. but it was a great process. And these people treated me with the utmost respect and kindness and compassion and really made me feel like I now was part of, you know, University of Washington. And that testing period from beginning until when I got the okay, it was about a 10-month period from beginning to end. When they said, yep, you're good to go. When do you want to do this?
So if anything, you come away knowing you are a very healthy person because your body can handle donating a kidney, essentially.
Yep. They, you know, checked every box and looked everywhere they could and basically found nothing. And I think all of us who might be able to walk away from like a full body medical and have multiple physicians in their expertise field say you're completely good to go, that's like it's a great feeling to have that. And I feel blessed to have that because I know not everybody has that.
And did you have to pay anything for all of these extensive tests?
No, this is part of the donation process to evaluate donors to make sure that they can move on and, you know, live a healthy life on their one remaining kidney. And the recipient's insurance is what covers this entire process for a donor.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is it's that invasive for the person that's going to get the kidney too. I don't know why, but I thought when I was being worked up, I now know what a woman must go through to some degree when she is having a baby, because there is no place they're not going to look. And sometimes they look more than once.
Yep.
and so I came away with so much respect, and at the same time, you know, it wasn't necessarily all peaches and cream. I mean, there is some things that you know, questions and prodding and whatnot, that you go, really, is this necessary? But it is. And we just have to accept the fact that, you know, that's the way it is. And so I'm glad you endured through all of that. I'm going to ask you a question here that's going to sound similar to the question you got asked before, but it's a little different. If someone was interested in being a kidney donor, who should they contact? And where do they start?
Yeah, so there's a couple of good places, and you know, dial the clock back 25 years or so. I'm not sure how I would answer this question, but it's actually fairly simple right now for anybody anywhere to just pop in Google, you know, kidney transplant centers within the area where they live, and that short list of centers will populate there, and it definitely varies around the country. Some cities have multiple centers, and other places you might live, you might not have one. You might have to travel to get to the nearest transplant center. So you can go that route, or you can get in touch with the National Kidney Foundation or the National Kidney Registry. And both those routes would be able to lead somebody, you know, to the front door so they can see if they want to begin the process in that regard.
Yeah, and if they got a computer, and most people do, or a smartphone, it's probably a www. You know, kidneyfoundation.org and yes. Or .gov or .com, and it'll get you there. You know, and then I've got two brothers. I don't have any sisters. The three of us all had polycystic kidneys, and we've all been transplanted. And Seattle has three transplant hospitals. They've got the University of Washington, Virginia Mason, and
Swedish.
Yeah, Swedish. And so my little brother had his at Swedish, and my middle brother had his at Virginia Mason, and I had mine at the University of Washington. Now somebody will probably go, well, why did you choose the University of Washington? Why did they choose? Well, sometimes you get told no. And if you have the opportunity to go to a different hospital, they'll say yes. It's not that the first one that said no was being snobbish or whatever. They got their reasons. But it's no reason to quit. No is not no forever. No is just not right now. And so you move on to your other options. And that's the great thing about the change situation. Where before, they never did that. You know, you talked 25 years ago. My dad was up for a kidney transplant and was told he was too old. Can you imagine that? Told he was too old. And he was 49.
Wow.
So not only that, I mean, the requirements from when I had mine 17 years ago have changed. And so through time and through technology and advancements and so on and so forth, things change. And so we're in the Seattle area, you're fortunate that you have three hospitals to choose from. And if you're in the Spokane area, which is on the east side of Washington, then you've got a transplant unit there. And some of those go to the University of Washington and they travel the distance. So it's a no is not a no. I just wanted to throw that out there to people. It's just a not right now. And keep proceeding with that whole process, because it is going to be a journey that's so much better than the journey you're on right now. Ashley and I and several other people in the Road Back to Life that have been transplanted have, you know, it's just like somebody kicks you in passing gear in a car. You know, when you used to step down on the accelerator and, you know, the four barrel kicked in or whatever, and passing gear, it dropped down into another gear and away you went like a rocket. And that's kind of what it was. I thought I was feeling good before that. But boy, after I got my transplant, man, I was like, what is this stuff? Is it in this little plastic bag they're feeding me or what, you know? But yeah. And where do you start? I would say you start local.
Yep.
If you can. And if you're out there in a, you know, in an area that's really rural, then, you know, you need to start as local as you possibly can.
Yeah, start local, reach out, go online, like you said, or reach out to local transplant centers, and they can help guide you, because, I mean, they're not going to turn someone down who wants to donate. They'll put you through the process, and maybe then they'll turn you down if you have something you didn't know about. But, I mean, they are going to help you donate your kidney if that's truly what you want to do. Because people, I mean, there's a lot of people waiting on the list, a lot of people that need kidneys. So it's just an incredible thing. It's an incredible decision for someone to make to do something like that. And then through this whole process that you've been through, Bobby, if you could tell someone who is interested in being a donor one thing, what would you tell them?
I would, someone who might be contemplating journeying down this road, I would just encourage them to try to become as educated as they can about the process and speak to donors. It might be difficult for some people to know how they can reach out and speak to a donor, but I think that transplant centers have mentoring programs set up for people who have been donors to reach out to those who are in the process of that. I was fortunate to have Amy as my mentor through UW. She donated at University of Washington, and once I entered into this stream, they asked me if I wanted to have someone to speak to, and I said yes, and I would encourage everybody to say yes, and she's a friend for life, and they've welcomed me in like part of their family now. She was one of the first ones to greet me after my surgery. And that's a whole nother story that is good for another podcast someday. But before you get into the pipeline, there's enough online now to to be able to research and get a pretty decent idea what the general process looks like and to find other donor stories. There's different donor groups. So there's tools there to tap into. That's probably what I would encourage people to do.
And then I know that you've mentioned to me before that even after this whole process and everything that you've been through, if you could, you would do it again.
Oh, I would. I mean, it, you know, maybe it takes you 6 months to kind of recover a little bit, to get back to where you were. And I would turn around and do it again 6 months later. I would just keep churning kidneys out because like you say, Ashley, the waiting list is enormous. People die. It's on average, 13 people die a day waiting for a kidney that never comes. If you start to do just simple math of how many people in this country have two kidneys that might be physically and emotionally able to donate, you can wipe out that list just in that regard. It's been such a powerful experience. I would do it all over again.
And I see the joy in your face when you talk about it, you know? Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
It's been that experience that I've seen in other donors' faces as well. It's kind of an interesting, I don't know, paradigm or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, we're in a country that's got over 300 million people, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And if half of those people, that's would be over 150 million. If 1% of those people would give a kidney, there wouldn't be a waiting list. The only waiting list we'd have is for people who needed a kidney, you know, because we'd be knee deep and people ready to give them. And so, you know, and I want to touch on some other thing here, just really quick, is the fact that simply there are other people out there waiting for organs, and it's not like a person can give them one. You know, we got heart and lung, there's the liver. So I would encourage you to at least think about on your driver's license being a donor. Because I know a young lady that was in her family died of a heart aneurysm, of an aneurysm unexpectedly, and she was 40. And the amount of people that she helped afterwards was incredible. We're not talking major organs here. You know, we're talking skin grafts and stuff as well. People who are burned, whatever the case may be. So, you know, please consider that. And right now, I think we're going to stop. And we're going to have a little roundtable discussion here on the next segment, because I think we're going to delve just a little bit deeper into some things here as well. So please stay tuned. If you've heard the first one, we hope you listen to this one and the one that's coming up. All right, this is Don and Ashley just saying be kind to one another. We hope this week's show has provided you with valuable information and inspiration you can apply to your life. Keep in mind, anything said on this show is for educational purposes only. As always, we encourage you to write down your questions and take them with you to your healthcare provider. If you have any questions for us, or would like to talk to one of our mentors at The Road Back to Life, please feel free to email us at mail@theroadbacktolife.com and we'll be happy to assist you. Now be kind to one another.